From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Welcome back, Chiefs fans. It is the day after the big win in Denver with your Chiefs leading this division again. We have a great show for you. We're doing a crossover with Zach from the Locked On Jags show. And this is one, this is going to be the primetime matchup of this week. The Jaguars defense is a whole other beast. Maybe even a step above what we saw against the Denver Broncos, and they have some unique matchups and capabilities. We're going to go all through those here in a little bit. Because of the short week, we're on a compressed schedule as well, and I just want to take this moment to say thank you to all the fans of the Locked On Chiefs podcast, of RGR Football. I saw a bunch of you at the Broncos game, and very happily after the Chiefs had beat them, and I appreciate all the time and all the hellos. I'm sorry I didn't get to see everybody, but thank you, and I appreciate everything you guys do. So for today, just want to touch on some news before we get rolling. And the Chiefs made a move on Tuesday, letting Alex Ellis go. He was waived in order to sign another DB, a guy who's got some playing experience. Josh Shaw was with the Bengals for, I want to say, four seasons. Played sparingly. I think he got 12 starts in that time. Played both safety and corner. So he's another versatility guy, as we've seen over the years, to try and fit in that Sutton defense. And I don't know if there's another injury coming. You would think they would have let somebody go if that were the case. But it's definitely something that they're looking towards this passing attack, I think, that they're going to have something to be concerned about. So they've made that move. Other than that, no new injury news at the point where we're recording this now. So why don't we get into it, and we'll start talking about the next matchup, Jaguars and Chiefs. All right, folks, it is time. It's the weekly crossover section where we have to kind of get behind enemy lines here. And we have Zach over from Locked On Jags, and this is going to be pretty much the premier matchup of this week and maybe of the last several weeks. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me on. Excited to get this crossover going and preview what I'm thinking. And I know a lot of people kind of called that Jaguars-Patriots game the matchup of the year to start the year with the two AFC championship teams. But I truly think this is the best game at the start of the season across the NFL as a whole in terms of the dynamics of both teams. I'm excited.
I am as well. And, you know, it's kind of strength on strength. Obviously, I think we'll start here talking about the Chiefs offense against the Jags defense and really what the traits are that they have to try to work out. And obviously, with the Chiefs coming off Monday Night Football and all the focus on Pat Mahomes, you know, we know about the secondary. We know how athletic the Jaguars defense is. But how do you think philosophically they want to look at trying to attack Pat Mahomes?
Well, they're going to want to try to force him to panic. Not that he's really shown that that's something that gets him too much at this point. But, I mean, he's been so dynamic to start his young career. And I was a really, really huge fan of him coming out. I actually was one of the few people that wanted him to be the Jaguars' fourth overall pick. Over starting quarterback Blake Bortles. But regardless, he hasn't really shown that he panics too much under pressure, but I'm not sure how else you can stop this guy other than just continually getting in his face. And I think that's what the Jaguars are going to have to do. I think they're going to have to unleash more blitz packages, which they really don't like to do. They were near the bottom of the league in blitz percentages last year, still not heavily using it this year, but they're going to have to trust their guys to play a little bit more man, which they're normally reluctant to do, and just see where they can go from there, because they've got guys that can, you know, match up with these receivers, right? Like, they've got Jalen Ramsey, they have A.J. Bouye, even D.J. Hayden's really come along well in the nickel corner role. So they're going to have to just kind of match those guys up strength for strength, and the rest just try and put the pressure on Mahomes, because otherwise he's proving he can tear up just about anyone.
So you really think that the Jags are going to try to adapt and play more man up on guys like Hill and maybe Watkins if he's healthy?
I think so, and that in itself still provides tests, even for the best of the best, because obviously Tyreek Hill is a freak of nature. Sammy Watkins, is it fair to say that he's underrated only because he's technically the number two behind Tyreek Hill?
Right.
He's still so proficient at what he does that even guys like Bouye and Ramsey, who are considered the league's best tandem, like, it's not going to be a cakewalk for them whatsoever. Both sides of the ball there are really going to have to, you know, they'll make plays no matter what. I'm sure the secondary will make some nice plays. I'm sure Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins will make their fair share of plays as well. And I think that's just what makes it so exciting, is to know that, hey, this really is the best of the best going against each other. So who's going to claw one out?
And that's kind of how I feel about it too, especially when what we saw Monday night from the Chiefs, that they couldn't get what they normally do. Couldn't get rolling. Couldn't get the whole Mahomes to Kelsey thing going. You know, the Broncos were very specific in the way that they attacked Tyreek Hill and to a lesser extent, Sammy Watkins. So what we saw for the first time was that the Chiefs actually started to lean on Kareem Hunt and that offensive line who struggles against some outside pressure. The tackles are solid, but not great. And I think what they want to do is they need to be able to shift gears and run downhill. But if they do that against the Jaguars, obviously they have some pretty stout defenders inside. If you were going to pick somebody to attack, if you're scouting the Jaguars, where do you try to run on?
I think I just put my trust in what they're able to do in terms of going back and forth with their pass rush, because they've run a pretty strict defensive philosophy that one side is always going to be power rushing. The other side's always going to be speed rushing, unless they're running nickel packages every now and then that will include speed guys on the outside, power on the inside. And they've got a really, really sturdy rotation of guys that can do that. They've got Yannick Ngakoue and Calais Campbell, who in base will work outside with Malik Jackson and Marcel Darius working the inside. That right there is why they send four-man pressures so much, because they can truly win all these matchups, all four positions across the defensive line with that. Or in nickel formations, they'll put Yannick Ngakoue and Dante Fowler, two speed guys on the outside, Campbell and Jackson on the inside to win with power, and it allows them to stunt. That's what Fowler does. When Fowler's on the field, I wouldn't even worry too much about him winning one-on-ones versus more they find ways to scheme him to get to the quarterback. I'm not the biggest fan of Dante Fowler, but regardless, they'll find ways to pull some tricks, especially if they are deciding to blitz. Watch out for nickel corner blitzes. When DJ Hayden's on the field, he has recorded two sacks this year, and they showed in the past with Aaron Colvin that he was a guy they tried to get home a little bit, but he never really got there. Hayden is athletic enough to make plays pretty much anywhere, especially near the line of scrimmage, and I wouldn't be shocked if he actually has a big part of this team's pass rush trying to get to Pat Mahomes.
Well, that's what I'm looking for, too, and I think one of the most important things is it seems like from the film that I've seen, and I haven't dug too deep yet, it seems like that aggression is something that pays off in the front four. And do you think that this team in particular right now is susceptible to the screen game? Is that something that you would like to utilize if you were scheming against them?
I think that they can get their fair share of screen plays off. That'll be successful. The Jags run a lot of cover three. So they like to keep their guys, or they run cover three and they run off man a lot, which has always been kind of weird to me because I feel like Jalen Ramsey's home is at the line of scrimmage face to face against a wide receiver. But they play a lot of off man. It will catch them off guard. It's a play that I think the Patriots were able to convert a couple. They are susceptible to some underneath plays as well. So if they're running underneath crossers, some different concepts in the short game, kind of some West Coast type of concepts, the Jaguars have been susceptible to that at points. So that's a point of attack that you can get. And then coming from that, you can try and run the ball a little bit more and catch the Jaguars off guard. Because I'm sure everyone's going into this game thinking that this is the Mahomes show, run second type of thing. Like you said, how they brought that out against Denver, against the Broncos the other night, they started to finally rely on the run because everyone is so focused on the pass game at this point. So if you can get those short yardage plays to consistently start rolling and then maybe at some point catch the team off guard and go deep with Mahomes, that might be where you beat the Jags.
That's kind of what I'm thinking too. And there's one other matchup that I'm really intrigued by because I'm trying to figure out if I was running that defense, how I would try to set it up. He was real slow out of the gate against the Broncos, but Travis Kelce's had a career where he's kind of up and down, and it usually bounces back pretty hard. How do you expect them to try to defend him in particular?
So in years past, the Jaguars have had major issues with covering tight ends. Last year, even with the defense that was near the top of the league, they had their fair share of tight ends beating them in one-on-one matchups. This year, their biggest test so far has been Rob Gronkowski, and they did it a little different this time, and they pretty much stuck free safety Sean Gibson on Gronk everywhere he went, and it worked, which is weird because Sean Gibson's like 5'11", 200 pounds, but and kind of right. more of the ball hawk guy, not as much the physical guy. Rob Gronkowski was targeted four times, two receptions for 15 yards, and Kelce is that kind of same dynamic, like the big body, like physical tight end, athletic tight end, can go play the ball tight end, truly a dynamic passing threat when he's on his game. And it'll be a tough test for Gibson, but honestly, with the success he had against Gronk, I wouldn't be shocked if they try and run the same type of thing.
Well, that's good to know. I'm interested to see that. It's one of those things, like I said, that he bounces back pretty hard, and this particular offense this season has so many weapons. It's honestly a toss-up what we're going to see or how they're going to use these weapons each week. So I'm as much in the dark as anybody else, but looking at those matchups, I think really Kelce might be the primary, and then play off of that to go try to get outside or get behind. If they're going to stay in cover three, though, is that your expectation, or you think they're going to try to man up and play some guys over the top?
I think they will know that they have to try and man up, and they haven't brought that out yet because, you know, they against the Patriots weren't playing that aggressive, and they were really trying to work the underneath game. And despite the Jaguars winning that game, Brady still had a pretty solid game. That's just what he did. He was able to eat up the underneath, and the Jaguars were trying to prevent the big play by playing cover three. I think they know that they need to man up and get the pressure on to Mahomes here because, I mean, you just go back and watch what he's done. So, like, people compare him to Brett Favre, right? And I think it's deservedly so. He can just tear you up, and then he can chuck a ball down the field in ways that no one has ever seen before. And he can just pull things out of thin air, like that left-handed throw last night. That was incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think the Jaguars need to understand that they can't just stick to what they've been doing. They have to start testing the waters a little bit, bringing more guys blitzing, putting guys more in man-to-man. And truly, you know, if Jalen Ramsey has to get in Tyreek Hill's head, like, so be it. That's what he's got to do. He hasn't really brought that side out of him this year where he's trying to get in people's heads like he did in years past. And I think that that's the element they're going to have to tap into, not as much the norm. Otherwise, they could catch themselves getting behind in this
game. I can see that happening as well. Folks, that's look at one half of the ball. Make sure you're checking out Matt Williamson. He's got a great new lineup on his show every single day. And make sure you're checking out the Locked On College podcast. We have all kinds of teams joining all through the season. So if you are a college football fan, make sure you check out your team on the Locked On Network. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to flip it over and talk about the Jags offense and this Chiefs struggling defense.
You know, ever since we started this podcast, people have been asking us for advice. Usually it's what team to bet on this week. The truth is, we don't know who's going to win. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why we always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust us, guys. They're your best bet this season. They've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is very easy to use. Go lay down some cash and win big today. We would only recommend a service to our listeners that's been good to us. That's why we're urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON25 when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. In my book, you will match the listener's first deposit 100% up to $1,000.
So, top question, and you just tell me if I'm out of line. Is it Jekyll and Hyde with Blake Bortles, or is he consistent at all?
Honestly, you'd figure that there would be some form of consistency by year five, fresh into the 3 year extension. It's Jekyll and Hyde, man. I'm telling you. Like, I thought the Titans would provide a bit more of a test on defense than they were given credit for because I do like what they have in that front seven. I didn't think it would be that bad, especially with how their secondary has performed this year. They were allowing a lot of yardage to receivers throughout the first couple of games. I thought Blake might be able to get a couple off, but dude, he had nothing going his way at all. There were missed reads, some open guys deep that he just was nervously checking down to running backs instead. He wasn't giving things time to develop. There were some bad drops as well. There was a lot of pressure, and he was caught off his rocker. And Then next week he comes back and plays a career game against the Jets, 2 weeks removed from a career game against the Patriots. So honestly, people are starting to label it like even in odd weeks. Like odd weeks he has a bad game, even he has a good game, which naturally makes people nervous for this Chiefs game being a week five game. But at the same time, I think he's really, really comfortable when there's not much pressure getting to him and the underneath game opens up. They like to run passing concepts that are West Coast fashion. The underneath, the slants, the curls, the quick releases, all these type of things, being able to run play action, simple things where he can make plays with his feet and just quick, simple reads. And that's where D.D. Westbrook has really emerged as a receiver in place of Marquise Lee in that underneath role while utilizing his speed in the short game. If Blake can get comfortable there, a lot of things open up. If he can't get comfortable, good luck doing just about anything, really.
I think that's kind of how the Chiefs are going to see it as well. They're going to want to play some man and try to disrupt some of these routes because, like you said, he's better early in the down than he is late from what I've seen. But I think the other thing that goes with is they have to get that pressure. And unlike what they've tried to do in the past, when I look at how the Jags O-line is pass blocking, it looks to me like there's more opportunity inside than outside. Am I wrong on that?
Especially last week or the past couple of weeks, not against the Jets. That's my bad. I would say yes. They had Chris Reed in the game for AJ Cann, who is having a career year that no one saw coming, but he's been playing great when he's been on the field. There was definitely a lot of pressure coming from the interior. Brandon Linder has not been healthy throughout the year. He's been playing, but he hasn't been healthy. Andrew Norwell has been playing pretty well when he's not causing a stupid hands to the face penalty. He has been playing up to worth of his contract. It's just that he's having about one of those penalties per game. That's just a total killer. Josh Wells did come in to take over for Cam Robinson when he tore his ACL in week two. I'll tell you something about Josh Wells. When he's got help coming from Norwell, he looks like a dominant pass protector. When you've got him on an island and Norwell's assignment is staying straight ahead or moving in to help the center, Josh Wells is going to get flipped like a helicopter, like just flying around. I'm not kidding. It's just so hit or miss. It depends on the assignments on the offensive line. So the Chiefs' best option, especially if Cann is healthy this week, is hope that the assignment isn't Norwell double teaming with Wells and that they can attack Wells maybe from a wide seven or a wide nine type of technique where they've got a really wide rusher coming at Wells where he's got to take him on one-on-one. He cannot handle speed whatsoever. And suddenly you're flushing Blake out of the pocket. Now Blake can run, but he's had several moments where Wells has been beaten so quickly that he gets pressure put on him and he can't do anything about it.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good matchup for the Chiefs because I think you're going to have Chris Jones attacking Norwell pretty well inside consistently, which would then put Houston on the tackle pretty much all day long. So,
yeah,
there's that one.
Yeah. Wells, I watched it. I mainly watched his New England film as he came in, and I saw, and I've obviously kept up with how he's done, but my main focus was on his New England film. In that game, and it was three quarters, he allowed seven pressures per Pro Football Focus. They tracked it. And at that point, I think the next highest on the team through two games was like two pressures. So you get him on that island and it's not going to be pretty whatsoever. But I'll tell you what, that'll be a, you know, the game of the season so far for Justin Houston.
Well, we'll see what happens there. The thing that I'm more concerned about, although I have to say after last week, I'm a little less concerned. As of right now, and folks, we're recording this the night before you actually hear it, but Leonard Fournette's still hurt. He's restrained that hamstring, right? Do you have any expectation that he's going to be available this week?
Definitely. I do not think he will be available for this week or the next coming weeks. People are speculating. I don't think there's any chance it happens. But whether or not it would be better just to put him on the injured reserve short term, because he has a history dating back through college of leg injuries. Hamstring is a rather new one, but you know, you don't want to rush people back from hamstring injuries, especially a guy that has consistent lower body injuries throughout his career. He missed two games. The first game, I think they knew, and it was against the Patriots, that he wouldn't play. The game plan just screamed, we knew Fournette wasn't going to play. The one against the Titans screamed, we thought Fournette was going to play and we didn't prepare for him not to, and we screwed ourselves because they tried to run Corey Grant on inside zone. That is not ideal whatsoever. It doesn't matter what's going on. You never want him trying to run inside zone. That's not his forte. He doesn't have the vision for it. It's just not his thing. And I think even if he does miss the game, they've played well without him when they knew he wasn't going to play. They play to TJ Yeldon's strengths, who has really developed into what I personally think is the Jaguars' best all-around back, even when Fournette's available. And that's not an indictment of Fournette, because Fournette is incredibly special at what he does when he's healthy as a power back. He's growing in terms of elusiveness, but really he truly brings that rare power that we don't see as much anymore with the NFL not relying on the run as much. But Yeldon has become an efficient inside runner when they're running inside zone. He's become a really efficient receiving back. He can pass block. He's doing really well and in a contract year as well, which is really big for him. I think they'll keep him around when the offseason comes as a, you know, the consistent second running back on the team. So with him on the field, the Chiefs will still have to prepare for some form of run game. It's just going to be a totally different look than it would be when Fournette would be on the field.
Let's take another quick break and then we'll talk about more on Yeldon.
Are you looking to go check out a Chiefs game next weekend against the Jacksonville Jaguars? You need to go check out Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is an online ticket marketplace dedicated to providing fans of live entertainment with experiences that can last a lifetime. With Vivid Seats, listeners can watch their favorite teams and artists perform in person. Vivid Seats helps fans find their seats to any of their favorite live events, including sports, concerts, theater, and more. They offer great prices and an easy purchasing experience. With the podcast code LOCKEDON, listeners can receive $20 off orders of $200 or more if they are a first-time customer of Vivid Seats. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Enter promo code LOCKEDON to receive $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. All Vivid Seats confirmed orders are backed by 100% money-back guarantee.
Yeah, the thing that impresses me about him, like you said, he's grown this season. He's got one of the, I want to say it's top 10 now, yards per carry after contact, according to PFF. And folks, if you haven't checked out our friends at PFF, their elite package, you can get all these stats that I'm looking at too, but I'm just going to tell you right here, so I'll save you the time. 2.67 yards after contact. That's really, really great for a back that I always felt was a little bit undersized. But if he's your primary, is it then Corey Grant that becomes your third down type guy, or are they really interchangeable on every down?
He is a guy that is viewed by the fan base as, why doesn't he play more? And the Titans game was a perfect reason as to why he doesn't. Because they were trying to give him those inside zone carries, the Fournette style that this offense lives and breathes by for the most part when he's healthy. And he just can't do it. Someone wrote up something in the Jags fan base recently. I can't remember what it was, but he's a utility guy. Like, you have to have you have to be running two running back sets, which they've started to do a very little bit. It's just getting creative where you have a guy like Fournette and Grant or Yeldon and Grant on the field. So teams don't know the ball's going to Grant, because when they do, it's easy to stop him because he doesn't have the vision to try and break off on his own. But you've got teams that are kind of, you know, on their toes because they don't know who's getting the ball. And then you pop the ball off to Grant on the outside or on an angle route or on an underneath route, something like that, or a wheel route. And he can break off and he can be truly dynamic. So I wouldn't expect them to plan it on him being a third down back or a solo guy on the field. Rather, they're going to have to really try and be creative with him, where the Chiefs can't really predict that it's coming and catch them off guard. Because when he's gone, he's gone. Like, for sure, he's got the breakoff speed to be able to make plays. But in terms of, you know, the responsibilities of a true running back, he doesn't have that.
You know, when I look at the passing game, like you said, Westbrook stands out. And to me, it's not just the yardage. It's the fact that he's catching 84% of his passes. And I think that's great for a guy that I thought was going to take a little bit longer to get up and running in the NFL. But do you think the passing game flows through him, or are they looking to spread it out and attack the edges of this Chiefs defense?
It honestly depends game to game. That's when people start to talk fantasy. It's that you genuinely have no idea, like, who's going to get the biggest share of targets from week to week. they really try and force targets to Dante Moncrief. I get the logic. They paid him nearly $10 million in free agency. It's almost as if he has to try and get targets early in the year so they can say, well, we tried. And for the most part, he's not creating separation. He's not getting the job done in terms of route running. He's not that sharp, but he can win contested plays in the red zone. That's what he's provided the most of so far. Last week, he had a pretty good game, but besides that, when you watch the film on him, he's not getting the separation they need. That's fine, because I'm fine with not giving him the ball unless you're in the red zone. Keelan Cole has become kind of their most well-rounded receiver. He's a guy that can play deep. He's a guy that can run the intermediate routes, which he's really grown from year one to year two in terms of playing all around. I think they'll try and get him the ball a good bit. Westbrook will be the underneath guy. He's a conversion possession guy. That's not what anyone really envisioned from him coming out of college with a 4.4 40-yard dash. They thought he'd be what Keelan Cole was in his rookie year as the deep threat guy. And in the absence of Marquise Lee, I think that Westbrook has really filled Lee's role perfectly in that possession style. The crosser guy, the dude that's converting plays on third down in key situations and becoming a favorite target of Bortles. So they've got guys in certain roles where they can spread the ball around. It just really depends on the situation, but all of them have positives in their game that are unique in their own way.
Well, I think it's a pretty well-rounded game that we have here. And when I look at the outcome, the defense the Jaguars are putting out on that field has me a bit nervous, but I think overall firepower, the Chiefs have an edge there. For me, it comes down to whether they can stop the passing attack of the Jaguars on the other side and keep them from keeping up. I see this as a pretty tight game. But I still am going to take the Chiefs. Don't be offended. But I think it's like 31-28 kind of thing.
Oh, I think it's going to be tight too. And I know we touched on the Jags offense versus the Chiefs defense. It's obviously totally opposite. Like, that's not where the dynamics are for either team. So it very well could be a decent scoring game for this Jaguars. The Jags are going to have to come out early if they want to stop Pat Mahomes, get to him consistently, put him on the ground if they need to, of course, without getting some dumb roughing the passer penalty called on them at this point, because those are hard to avoid. And I mean, if they can get him on the ground and get him flustered like we haven't seen yet, that's where I think they put this game away. At the same time, I can't just go ahead and assume that's going to happen, because he is proving everyone each and every week that he is able to overcome any odds that come his way. I've got the Jags, but it really won't be by much. I'm going to make it 27-24.
Folks, you heard it here first. Thank you for listening. This is a crossover. Jags fans, if you're hearing this, we appreciate your time. Chiefs fans, get ready. This is going to be a knockdown dragout, I think. So, Zach, appreciate all your time. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you for having me on.
Folks, we will talk to you tomorrow.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Chiefs. Check out my work at RGR Football on YouTube, Chris's work on LockedOnChiefs.com, and all of Seth's film analysis at TheAthletic.com. Thanks for listening.